Boker Tov, good morning everybody. Good morning and welcome. Just looking forward a few weeks. Please God, the shiur should continue for the next few weeks until June. Towards the middle of June then there's a likelihood that I'm going to be away for a few weeks, but I'm sure the OU will update you of what's going to be here instead. I'm hoping to be in the United States. If anyone knows of a community that might be interested in me coming for Shabbos on the 22nd of June, there might be a spot there. If you know, there might be a spot open there, there might not, but just a little advert for that. But we have plenty of time for Shiurim in between, and we are in the middle of a series. Last week we laid some groundwork on electricity, which hopefully allowed us to move forward. Is the air on? Could you ask them to put the air on? You put the air on. Thank you. The air is now on, so we should keep cool in a hot topic. Last week, if you remember, we said that it wasn't so straightforward to identify the specific halachic issue involved in connecting a circuit. Where you're lighting a bulb or lighting a fire, then that's fairly straightforward. There are real halachic problems, official, mave, etc. But where you're simply connecting a circuit, what is the issue? And we saw last week the Chazon Ish wanted to suggest maybe it was boina, because you're putting two things together that on their own do not work and then together form something else. That's boina. He wanted to suggest maybe it's makib apatish. And we even brought you out last week just to remind you a source from the Yerushalmi that Rav Asher Weiss brought, that it could be makib apatish is the kind of catch-all. That when we can't work out why it's osa, but we kind of know that it's osa, then it might be makib apatish. We saw a very unusual source like that, and we'll see today Rav Moshe Feinstein picks up on that. But Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach basically said he didn't think it was either of those. He didn't think he was boina, he didn't think he was makib apatish. Usually there aren't any sparks, that's another question. Usually the wires don't get hot, that's a separate question. He thinks that we should probably go along with the view of Rav Yitzchak Shmelkes from 100-something years ago, that it's moilid. Moilid is introducing new life into something. In the case of the Gemara, it was scent, it was smell, a pleasant smell. And probably this is the issue with electricity, although Rav Shlomo Zalman himself said, I'm not 100% sure that it's even that, but that's what people have gone with, and let's go with that. Today, I want to apply that very specifically to a fascinating and quite controversial issue, which is the Shabbat microphone. Okay? This has been a significant debate, and the reason that I like this topic is it flags up some of the halachic and meta-halachic and hashkafic issues that we like to bring up in these shiurim. This is meant to be halachic and hashkafic issues, and I think today you'll see that there is a real overlap between them. Let's have a look at the historical debate to get into the mood. Well, the microphone was invented about 150 years ago in the United States. It was developed over the 1920s, 30s, significantly with the onset of radio, etc. The microphone became critical. And in the 1940s, Rabbi Simcha Levi in America, maybe it was Levi in America, who was the head of the RCA at the time, the Halachic Commission of the Rabbinical Council of America, published a decision saying that under certain circumstances, microphones would be permitted for use in shuls on Shabbat. Okay? This was very quickly countered by a psak in the 1950s, in 1951, by the Agudat HaRabbonim in the U.S., and we'll see Rav Moshe refers to that soon, where they said, absolutely not. Microphones are completely prohibited under all circumstances in Shul on Shabbat. We disagree with the ruling. Rav Soloveitchik, in 1954, in what was his first convention on becoming the head of the Halacha Commission in the RCA, Rav Soloveitchik said that he was actually against microphones on Shabbat, which went a little bit against what the RCA had said before. I brought you, if you're interested historically, Rav Schechter from YU mentioned it as follows. I put in the footnote in number one. He said, Rav Soloveitchik once spoke at an RCA convention and dealt with the issue of shuls that permitted the use of a microphone on Shabbos. He said that with regard to those who permit the use of the microphone, he wondered whether they understood the halacha well enough to permit this. And with regard to those who prohibited the use of a microphone, he wondered whether they understood the physics well enough to prohibit this, which is very interesting. And therefore, you can see a classic dichotomy there. Well, what did he say? He said yes, he said no. We'll see soon clearer understandings of that. In the 1970s, the chief rabbi of Israel, Rav Issa Yehuda Unterman, gave a psak permitting a microphone. This microphone had actually been created by Professor Zev Lev from Machon Lev. And Professor Lev created a microphone which he felt was appropriate for use on Shabbat. And Rabbi Unterman said, yes, I think that might work. And then there was a whole back and forth in Tradition magazine, in Tradition journal in America in the 1970s. There are articles back and forth and back and forth. There were articles written by Lord Jacobovitz, articles written by Rabbi J. David Bleich and others who you'd expect to come in on this. But the microphone really did not catch on. In the 1990s, Summit, which people might know is the organization based in Allenschwedt, around the corner from where I live, which actually develops these Shabbat-friendly electronic devices and electrical devices. Rabbi Rosen, who passed away recently, he actually created a microphone, which they now call the Summit microphone, which he said he didn't see why this was a problem to use on Shabbat. We'll see what the Summit microphone does and why it hasn't yet caught on, or whether it will catch on, etc. But that's basically the historical background. Let's have a look, pick it up in an article that Jerusalem Post wrote about 2 years, two or 3 years ago. In fact, exactly 3 years ago this week. So let's pick a few items out of this. Look on page one there, in source number one. This will introduce us a little bit to the issue. They headed it here, Shabbat microphones catching on amongst the Orthodox despite taboos. Now, almost everything they ever write in the paper, certainly the headlines, is misleading. Let's have a look at what they actually say. 10 years ago, they write, this is by a fellow called Sam Sukol. I don't know if anyone here knows him. He may still write for the paper, but he wrote this about 3 years ago. 10 years ago, the overflow crowd during the height of the summer season at Rabbi Mark Schneier Shul in West Hampton Beach, New York, some of you may know that shul, I don't, was so large, yeah, you know, it was so large that it had to be housed in tents on the lawn outside. The acoustics were terrible, as, by the way, they are in many shuls. If not non-existent, and many congregants decided to cease attending services because they felt disconnected from the activity inside. Turning to the then Israeli Chief Rabbi Yisrael Meir Lau and former Haifa Chief Rabbi Rav Shai Yisrael Cohen, Schneier was referred to Rav Yisrael Rosen, who I mentioned before from Summit, a national religious rabbi whose Summit Institute in Allenschwedt developed a halacha-friendly sound system. Microphones, like the issue of separation of sexes during prayers, has long been one of the dividing lines between Orthodox and conservative congregations. And we'll see that's a very big point, with traditionalists shunning the technology as a violation of the legal norms regulating Shabbos observance. When Rabbi Soloveitchik, the leading light of modern Orthodoxy during the mid-20th century, came out against the use of microphones in synagogues, he was expressing what had been the consensus amongst the rabbinate. Let's just skip a paragraph. According to Brandeis professor Jonathan Sarna, who studies American Jewish history, when Soloveitchik came out against the use of microphones, it was no doubt as part of his effort to distinguish Orthodoxy from conservative Judaism. Nowadays, the threat from conservative Judaism to Orthodoxy is much reduced. Everybody knows the difference. That's an interesting statement. And there is much more sensitivity to the hearing impaired, which is also a true interesting statement, much more concern and consideration than there used to be, as well as more pressure for larger synagogues in community with large Orthodox populations. I'm not sure that's true. I wonder whether shuls are getting larger or actually are getting more boutique and smaller, but anyway. And he continues, relying upon rulings by decision makers such as Rav Shaul Yisraeli from Eretz Chemda, Rav Issa Yehuda Unterman, the chief rabbi, Rav Chaim David Halevi, who is the chief rabbi of Tel Aviv, the Sonnet microphone uses only transistors without any glowing or burning elements. It is turned on by an automatic Shabbos timer, and once turned on, current flows continuously in the system. We'll see soon what all of that means. According to Summit Executive Director Rav Dan Moranz, the system is coming to use in 15 synagogues in Montreal, in Baltimore, Montreal, West Stamford, and other locations, as well as in 18 old age homes. Now, leaving aside the old age homes, where I understand there's a different kind of need, 15 synagogues across North America is not very much, really, amongst thousands of Orthodox synagogues, or certainly many hundreds. In many aging congregations, as the rabbi's voice weakens, and his listeners find themselves with decreasing auditory capacity. I like that. Yes. It basically means the rabbi's old and the congregation's a deaf. A congregant's a deaf. Okay. Such technology can enable people to be a part of the service, he added. Asked about the possible stigma of using the system, Moran said, Somit usually recommends that synagogues post signs stating that it is rabbinically approved, adding that innovations such as the automatic Shabbos time of the Shabbos elevator took time to be accepted but eventually became mainstream. I believe within 25 years it will be commonplace in Orthodox synagogues here in the Northeast, talking about the United States. Yes?
Could you please turn up your microphone?
I can't actually, because only the person at the end can. But no one in here has any problem hearing, so that's fine. Now, he's very excited about the possibility of the Tzomet microphone spreading across North America, but he works for Tzomet. So that's, I suppose, what he would say. What are the issues, and how is this actually panning out? So first of all, we have to look a little bit at how the microphone works. This is not very complicated technology. In many ways, it mirrors the natural technology of how our ears work. How do our ears work? Well, somebody across the room starts speaking, and their vocal cords create tiny little pressure differences in the air. Those pressure differences cross the room through the air in the room, and then when they hit your ear, they hit a membrane, which is your eardrum, which activates various little bones, which then push various little hairs which are attached to nerve cells and create electrical impulses which go into your brain, and our brains process that as sound. Sound effectively is something that only exists in our heads. It doesn't really exist anywhere else other than the way our brain processes it. The rest of it's just really air pressure. How does a microphone work? Well, very similarly, what happens is as follows. You have the head of a microphone, somebody speaks into it, the air pressure pushes a very, very fine membrane in the microphone. That membrane moves back and forwards because of the air pressure of my voice. That membrane is attached to an electrical coil, or a metal coil that goes around a magnet. And as anyone here knows, the way that electromagnetism works is if you have the interface between a magnet and a metal coil, electricity, etc., the magnet produces electricity, or the electricity can produce the magnet, they go with each other. So as this electrical coil passes forwards and backwards over the magnet, because of the air pressure, that produces a tinily varying electrical current because of the differences of the movement. That is then amplified into a significantly bigger difference, which goes through a wire, hits a speaker at the other end, and then they do exactly the same thing in reverse. They have the electrical impulses going in, a little electrical, a metal coil over a magnet, which turns the electricity back into movement of a speaker cone, and that movement boosts out the air. So what you have is my voice being turned into electrical impulses through this wire, and then back into sound pressure, air pressure coming out of the other side. It's really not that complicated. We've had this, I mean, it sounds quite complicated. I could never have thought of inventing it, but that's a different question. But I've given you some diagrams here that help you understand it. What in that system could cause us a halakhic problem? So the electricity is obviously one thing. We'll need to look at that, and we'll plug in what we saw, no pun intended, plug in what we saw last week. But let's look at the issues which are not such a problem, first of all. H. Early Poskim said, microphones cannot be used because there are filaments in the radio tubes which glow red when the microphone is in use. Now, no doubt, when there was a fellow with a bow tie on sitting by a table in the 1920s saying, this is the BBC, there were indeed red filaments in the radio tubes, but there aren't any such filaments today. So that's old technology. There are, however, today sometimes little LED lights, LED lights that go on. You may have seen at a wedding or whatever, as the sound gets louder, the lights go up and down, etc. So that is an issue, but that can easily be disconnected. I don't need those little lights to go on and off to get the microphone to work, so you can invent a system that doesn't require those little monitor lights, and we certainly don't have any glowing tubes anymore. Similarly, sparks. The early postgame are worried about sparks. Well, nothing sparks anymore when things are working through a microphone. If there is going to be a spark, it's when the system's turned on or when the system's turned off, and there shouldn't really be even then, certainly not with alternating current. There are no sparks when the system is actually in use, so that's not such a problem. So let's go on to the main issue. Today's shiur really focuses around one tshuva, and we'll be looking at other things around that, which is a landmark tshuva of Rav Moshe Feinstein. Rav Moshe Feinstein, in 1969, wrote two tshuvas back-to-back. One of them dealt with microphones, and one of them dealt with hearing aids. So this week I want to look at microphones, and next week I want to branch out into the hearing aid issue and talk about some other issues to do with microphones which are not related to today's share. But today I want to look at what he says, because I think you'll see it's extremely informative. Have a look here in source number one on the top of page 3. Tamei ha'itzur ledaber b'microphone. Why is it prohibited to speak in a microphone? He doesn't even question, is it or isn't it? Why is it prohibited to speak in a microphone? He wrote this in 69 to a Rav Yitzchak Sidelsky. I don't know if you know who that is. I know a Sidelsky from Har Nof. I don't know if he's related, but that's not the point. B'davar ledaber b'shabbos al yidei ha-microphone. What about speaking a microphone, says Rav Moshe? Pashut she'asur. It's clearly asur. Good timing. Well, it'd be good just to remember to turn your phones off, please. Ukfar pirsumu agudas harabonim shehu osur. And they've already announced in the agudas harabonim in the 1950s that it's osur. And leaving aside that the RCA said that it was mutter, it was permitted, he's quoting the agudas harabonim. Va'av she'ike inshi sheloi yadu alehem hatamim, even though there are people who don't understand why it's osur. Okay, mukhuyadim nishmoa lahoirat chachomim. They have to listen to the agudas harabonim. Okay? Well, correct. I mean, at that time in the 1960s. The Oysa Sheikeru, and those people who are lenient, lo asu kahogin, they are not doing the right thing, af im heim rabbonim, even if they themselves are rabbis, the af im oimrim shehem gedolim b'Torah, and even if people say about them that they themselves are great in Torah, they, I'm sorry, they can't use the microphone, they have to listen to the Aguda. The avar b'kitze et atamim. I want to tell you in brief the reasons why microphones are not allowed. Shehem shnayim sheyesh behem chashash ishe d'oraisa, v'shnayim shehem isurim v'dayim midrabonam. Four reasons, and we're going to look at all four reasons today. Two, he says, are concerns that there could be a Torah prohibition using a microphone, and two, he says, are definitely rabbinically prohibited. We're going to look at each of those four and examine why he thinks it's prohibited and why others maybe don't. Allah. The Yesh Leida, you have to know, Shekola Nishma Meha microphone, Einenu Kol Ha'adam Atzmo. You have to know that the voice coming out of that speaker right now is not really my voice. It's not the voice of the person themselves. Ela Kishimadabel, Nasi Roshem Shel Havarotav. When you speak, you leave an impression of some kind. Umashe Nishma, and what people are listening to, who Kol Ha'avara. You're listening to, well, how is he translating a havara here? Like a noise, an echo of some kind. You're listening not to my voice, but something's made an impression on something else, which has created a new sound. V'zeu chashash isha d'oraisa, and I'm worried that this might be a d'oraisa. V'mashe b'dibura inase roishen be'ezim makom be'a microphone. Because when I'm speaking, I must be making some kind of an impression on something inside the microphone system. Well, exactly what that impression is, he's not clear on. V'avshe ein zo ketiva. That's not writing. I'm not talking about writing. She'en an otios, because there are no letters. V'yesha kompanim ezim chashash melacha. But there is a concern this might be a malacha, one of the 39 malachas, me'acha shenitchadesh eze davar. Because something new is happening. Interesting. Something new is happening. He thinks that's probably a malacha. She'aridezeh nishma kol ram mehu merachot, because that's how you can hear the voice from afar. Ulai makeh bepatish. Maybe it's makeh bepatish. Ulai boina. Maybe it's boina. We have to actually think harder what that malacha would be. But I'm quite sure we are worried about an issa d'oraisa, even though I don't know what that actually is. Very interesting that Rav Moshe puts, it's very like the Yerushalmi we saw last week, that in some ways we first decide what we clear to us this is offer, and then we try and find some way to link it in. Makeh b'patish, she says, it must be, just like we saw. So he's concerned about a d'oraisa, but he just doesn't know what that is. But he knows it's there somewhere. Yes?
I don't
understand.
Is it
an
actual
listener
of one of the machines?
Why? We'll see. Good. But that's a drabonon. He's going to get there. Yes? The membrane's moving, so why can't you make membranes move on Shabbos? What malacha is membrane moving? I mean, creating movement. I can blow things and they can move around. There's no problem of creating movement per se on Shabbos.
With the
good, even so, that you would have to come up with why making movement is a problem on Shabbos in and of itself. So Alice, he says, he thinks there's a problem of the electricity in terms of making the something new. But he's not sure what that is. Bona makba papish. Bet. Shelefi midat hakol nigdal hotzad koach electric. And this I can tell you, that the louder you speak, the more electricity there is. V'nimsa shediburo hu magdil u maktin et ha'elektri. And while you're speaking, you're increasing and decreasing the current, the electrical current. V'roin ze b'chush, we can see this clearly, k'shemachabrim od machona, if you fix up another machine, a monitor machine, v'chashmal ha'modedit ha'dibur b'ha'microphone, l'misha rotzil ha'shvot et ha'kola. If people want to kind of balance the sound, they put a machine on with a needle, and you can see as you get louder, the needle goes up, and you get quieter, the needle goes down. So you are making a difference. And even if you don't attach that machine, kazol, such that we've said, yodin anachdo, we know for sure, she mishdamish b'dibura b'elektri, yoter mima shema microphone b'chibura mishdamish atzmo b'lo diburo. When I'm speaking in the microphone, it is using more electricity than when it's sitting at rest and doing nothing. My voice is creating new electrical currents. Ukeshema dabe, but call round, when I speak loudly, mishdamish b'od yoter, it uses even more. And by using more electrical current, that's also a concern of Isidore Raisa. After loy havara, even though there's no actual burning, the yeshla ayen bezer tuvala masa. But we have to look into this more carefully as to what exactly that is. So the Rav Moshe Feinstein has said that microphones are also firstly because of two concerns with the Doraisa. First of all, creating the electricity, which he's not sure exactly what that is, but he thinks it might be Makba Patish or Boiner. And secondly, with increasing and decreasing the currency, and he's not exactly sure what that is, and we need to look into it further. Yes?
Is there another example of something that people felt was wrong for Shabbat and they couldn't find a real reason and they used Makba Patish?
Well, other than the Gemara in the Yerushalmi that we saw last week, which I didn't know about that until I prepared the material, there are many various cases where we turn around and say something is not Shabbos-dick, but that's usually on a rabbinic level. That's usually Ovdin Dechol, which we're getting to soon. And that's a very catch-all category. It's more unusual to say that it's not Shabbos-dick, therefore maybe it's a Doraisa. That's a big thing to say. We'll see soon that Rav Moshe says it's clearly also for rabbinic reasons, but he thinks there may also be Torah reasons. Now, what's interesting, just one second, what's interesting is, and what Sonnet bases almost all of their innovations on, is the next source. Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach came back and said, look, well, he's not responding to Rav Moshe, he wrote this about 20 years earlier, but he's also talking about microphones. He said, okay, turning electrics on, turning electrics off, I'm not entirely sure why it's also, but it is also, and we've taken on that it's moiled. Moiled meaning injecting new essence of force into something. But turning electricity up or down, what they call a modulating current, says Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, I don't think that's also at all. I don't see why that's a problem. Certainly in a situation where there's a situation of need. And in fact, many of the Tzomet innovations, and they can speak for them better than I can, and they're experts and I'm not, but many of them work on this principle. For example, when you go through the security machine, the kotel on Shabbos, or when they buzz you up and down with one of those Shabbos-friendly metal detectors, the way that it works is that there's always some current going through. If you look carefully, you can see the little monitor, the little needle, is always registering something. By you going through, all that's happening is it's going up and down again, but not on and off. And you'll see Rabbi Shlomo Zalman here in number two, he says this very clearly. Kol hadvarim ha'ele lo nemru ele le'inyim potech v'sogezer. All of these issues that I've had to talk about here about electricity is turning on and turning off. Shall morer umakarer, okay, he's talking about fridges, etc., etc. Mashe ein kein b'medaber lifnei ha-microphone, but when you speak into a microphone, shall radio on a radio, sham ein nitzin klal, there are no sparks, shum nitzutzei eish v'tocha, first of all, he says clear there are no sparks. The kevan shekein, misdaber de menidon danan, and since that's the case, it seems pretty clear to us in our case, le'inyin shidur b'shabbat, about broadcasting something on Shabbat, al yidei ha-microphone, but often shechidei shazerem or hafsakato, al yidei tenudot meitre hakol, when you're basically making the electricity go up and down through your vocal cords, selamadaber, einan gormot klal l'shum pu'ula shel kibui v'hadlaka. First of all, you're not turning on, you're not extinguishing or lighting anything, or malacha acheret, And you're not doing any other malacha either. Meha malacha she'asa la'asotan b'shabbos. Why? Ela shehishtanot, hishtanut hazeren, by changing the current, shel microphone, po'el rak behitchal futo mipa'am lapam, it's only just changing every now and then, the shanot et tnufat gale haradio, changing the radio waves, okay, yotzin meha mashada, which are coming out of the broadcast. Ba'oifen shehem gorimin lebesof, sheha membrana, that the membrane ultimately shel hamakalet of the receiver, tit nad ned is now moving, ba'otan hit nudot, hit nodot, shel metre kolamadabet. All you're doing, bottom line, is changing current. Nira, these are very important words at the end, lichora she'ein lachush klal bazeh, I don't think you should be worried at all, lemeleches makib apatish, no makib apatish, v'chein le'is a tikkun mana, not making a kli either, or moilet, you're not doing moilet, kevan she'lon nase klal b'dibor shum davar she'osel asos of a Shabbat. And he falls back on what we thought was always the case, that if it's not osa, then it must be musa. If there's no reason why it's prohibited, then presumably it's okay, which is an important meta-halachic assumption. They've even hashgafic. When God came at Sinai and said, you can't do this, you can't do this, and you can't do that, presumably all those things that were never mentioned, you can still do. And that's where he's coming from in this. Yes?
I just wanted to be very clear. It's not that somebody couldn't find a real reason, so they took not the passage, is that a real...
It's a real reason, but the Chazal defines certain things as makib apatish. For us to now extend that and say, well, there are other things that we don't know what they are, so they should be makib. It is based on a source, 100%, like we saw last week. But Rav Shlomo Zalman doesn't want to do that. Certainly not when it comes to increasing and decreasing the current. Let's just go on a little bit, because you raised the point yourself about Hashmat Kol. Yes. Okay, quickly. Again, it's a good point. I'm not suggesting, Rav Moshe Feinstein is the Gadol Hador in Halacha. I'm not suggesting that he's making things up that don't exist. The very fact that he says it makes it a real halachic issue. No question about it. But you can see clearly that Rav Moshe himself is not clear what it is. He says that explicitly. And therefore he defaults to Makib HaPatish, which is interesting because it's not obviously Makib HaPatish. It might be Makib HaPatish in the sense you're taking unelectrified wire, putting in current and making something new, making it work. And we looked last week at why Makib HaPatish made sense and why the Chazon Ish thinks it might be. What's interesting is that Shlomo Zalman says, I'm sorry, I'm not prepared to extend things into Makib HaPatish when that's just not what they are. Yes. A Shabbat elevator, Rav Moshe Feinstein, I'm not sure what his position is on Shabbat elevators. Someone here may know, I don't know. Many people were unhappy with Shabbat elevators. They were invented for hospitals and all of a sudden found their way into hotels. That's another discussion, not for now. But a point that was made just before is, okay, on the Doraisa level, Rav Moshe is concerned, and we have to take his concerns very seriously. But Rav Shlomo Zalman thinks we can't extend things without a clear understanding of what the issa is. But there are rabbinic issas. Isurim. There are rabbinic Isurim which definitely could apply. Let's have a look at the first one, which Hashmat Kol. Lady over there made the point, isn't it prohibited to make noise on Shabbos? And microphones make lots of noise. That's the whole point of the microphone. Number three, Ein Noisin, says Gemara Shabbos. Ein Noisin Chitin, this is exactly the example you brought. You're not allowed to put grain, L'toich HaReichayim Shel Mayim, into a water mill. Okay? Ela B'chidei She'itachnu Mi Be'od Yom. It all has to be ground up before Shabbos comes in, says the Gemara. My time? Why? What's the problem? Why do I have to grind all my grain before Shabbos? I'm a rabba, so rabba comes in and says, Mipnei shemashmad kol, because it makes a noise all the way through Shabbos. It's a very loud grinding noise running through Shabbos of the grain being ground up. Amalei Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef says, no. Why all of a sudden you're worried about noise on Shabbos? Where does it say you can't make noise on Shabbos? He has a different reason. The Lemamar, why don't you say, Mishum Shvisas Kalim? Because your Kalim has to rest on Shabbos. We'll talk about that in a minute. The Tanyan, he brings a brisa that quotes the Pasuk in Mishpatim. Ubechol Asher Amarti Aleichem Tishmaru. God says after the mitzvah of Shabbos in Mishpatim, and make sure that you do all of the things that I told you to do, keep them. L'rabot, this word kol comes to increase Shvisas Kalim. Now what is Shvisas Kalim? So we have to rest on Shabbos. And we also have a mitzvah to make sure that our children rest. Ata ubincha ubitecha, okay? Avdecha v'amashcha uvehemtecha, okay? V'gersheva shebisharecha. So we have to make sure our children rest, even though they're not obligated themselves in mitzvah, that our animals rest, even though they're not obligated at all. The cow does not have to keep Shabbos. But I am not allowed to work the cow, or work the donkey, or work the horse on Shabbos. That's a mitzvah d'oraisa in and of itself. But what about my kelim? Do I have to make sure that my inanimate objects do not work on Shabbos? And came along Beis Shammai and said, yes, actually, this potter, shvitas kelim. You are not allowed to own machinery that works on Shabbos. Your lights may not be turned on before Shabbos and then burn through Shabbos. Your sprinklers may not be turned on before Shabbos and then sprinkle through Shabbos because your kelim has to rest. Beit Hillel, who we Paskin like, said, absolutely not. There is no concept of Shvitas Kalim. You can indeed turn on your light 5 minutes before Shabbos and leave them burning through Shabbos. You can light a candle just before Shabbos comes in and let it burn through Shabbos. Interesting question. What did Beis Shammai do about Shabbos candles? One answer was that everyone had to own somebody else's Shabbos candles because you couldn't have your Shabbos candles burning through Shabbos. Very interesting. Okay? And it's not quite the Karaite sitting in the dark, but it's a move a little bit in that direction, which brings the whole question as to was Beis Shammai more of an extreme, but that's not for now, that's a whole interesting analysis of the Second Temple period. But we don't paskin that way. We paskin that you're allowed to have anything working through Shabbos. When it comes to food, as long as you started it on Friday. When it comes to food, okay, so then we're concerned that if you put your food on just before Shabbos, and it won't be properly cooked when Friday night dinner comes and you're going to see it's not cooked, you might come to turn up the gas, and therefore Chazal makes certain prohibitions. Food has to be cooked to a certain degree. But generally speaking, we're not worried. We even put things on timers, more about that in a minute, and let the timer turn the sprinklers on. I have sprinklers that work through the whole week. They sprinkle 10 minutes in the morning, 10 minutes in the evening. They do that on Shabbos as well. There's no problem with that because everyone knows it's on a timer and that's fine. So if that's not the problem, maybe the issue is the noise. And Rashi brings that out, number 4. Shitachnu v'oidyon. What is the problem? Why do I have to have my mill finished grinding before Shabbos comes on? Mipnei shemashmat et hakol. Because as Rashi, it makes a seriously loud noise. The uvsha milsa. This is a very important expression. Uvsha milsa. The thing is very loud or in your face. The Shabbat, the ikka ziluta. It's a zilzul. What's a zilzul? Zol. What's zol? It cheapens Shabbat. It cheapens Shabbat to have things working all the way through Shabbat. The Me'iri makes a very similar point. If you look over on the next page, the Me'iri says, Ein noisin chitin letoif rechayim shalmayim, ele b'chidei shitachnu mipnei sheyesh ba hashmat kol. He brings the reason clearly as it's making a noise. Upirtsum godl. And it's a very public thing, he says. V'hu zilzul Shabbat. And this is a zilzul Shabbat. V'yesh matirin afbazo. But actually, he says, this is not everybody agrees on this. Because again, as we saw in the Gemara, there are two reasons for this prohibition of the mill. One could be the noise, one could be the shvitas kelim. According to the shvitas kelim reason, we don't paskin like that, so it shouldn't be a problem. According to the noise reason, maybe it is. So the Me'iri says, well, there are different views on this, and we'll see them right now. Some people hold that you can make noise on Shabbos. Some people hold that you can't make noise on Shabbos. And depending on which reason you brought to the Gemara before. And this came up in the 14th century when they invented chiming clocks. Mechanical clocks. Clocks were invented already in the 11th century, very old. They didn't work very well for a long time. But by the 14th century, people were beginning to invent chiming clocks. It was before the pendulum clock. That was invented in the 16th century. But they had mechanical clock mechanisms that chimed every hour or whatever. So the first mention that I found of this, here in the Darche Moshe number 6. The Darche Moshe is written by Rav Moshe Isserlitz in the 1500s, and he says, Nira, Midibri Ma'arivayel. He quotes the Ma'arivayel. The Ma'arivayel is one of the students of the Ma'aril, early 1400s in Germany. He says the following, B'tshuvotav, Siman Kuf Lamed. The Nakat L'chumra, he is strict, Shekasav al Kli HaMishkalot, on a machine which is made with weights, Shekoirin Zeiger. A Zeiger is a clock, nachon? They call it a Zeiger. Ha'osula Shmiya called the Shabbos, and it's made to chime through Shabbos. Asula Amido Me'erev Shabbos. You're not even allowed to wind it up on Friday. You can't do that. Because just like you can't put your grain in just before Shabbos, you can't wind up your clock just before Shabbos either. The truth is that the Shulchan Aruch actually permits the clock on Shabbos. And indeed, he permits the grain as well. Have a look here in number 7, and we'll see how this works. You're allowed to open the sprinklers on your garden. And they can go all through Shabbos as long as you do it on Friday. You're allowed to put the grain into your mill before Shabbos. He allows this. Just before nightfall. Indeed, the Sfardim are more lenient on this, because they understood that there is no real problem of making noise. The problem there was Shvitas Kalim, and we don't pass in like that. And the Ramot adds, according to that opinion, clearly we're not worried about the noise. Sheyomru, people might say, Rechaim shel ployni tochnot b'Shabbat. The ployni's factory is working on Shabbat. That's inappropriate. V'yesh oisrim, but there are those that say no. They prohibit v'Rechaim, u'bekol makam sheyesh lachush l'hashmas kol, or indeed anything else that is going to make noise. And there is a machmir opinion. So what do we follow? The Ashkenazim. The hachi nahug lechatchila. Ideally, we should be strict and not have any noise-making machinery on Shabbos. Mihu b'makam pseida. But if there's going to be a loss, yesh lahakil, then we can be lenient. And then he says at the end, and you're allowed to set up the clock before Shabbos, because everybody knows that the clock was set on Friday. No one's going to think you're setting the clock on Shabbos. So bottom line, where does that leave us with making noise? It leaves us with the Sfarim being lenient, the Ashkenazim being strict ideally, but in a situation of need, the Ashkenazim also being potentially lenient. That's how it comes out from that. Now, how does Rav Moshe pick that up? Let's go back into Rav Moshe. The third reason Rav Moshe brings, he says, is as follows. Number 8. Kivan shebachol, haderech lachaber microphone ha-elektri rak b'sham. Since normally on a weekday, on a Wednesday morning in the OU Israel Center, you normally turn the microphone on when you need it. You don't have it running from Tuesday evening. Even if he says there was no Doraisa, and he accepts he wasn't clear that there really was a Doraisa, even if there's no Issa Doraisa, I'm absolutely clear, says Rav Moshe, this is rabbinically prohibited to use a microphone. Just like you can't put the grain into your mill, the Erev Shabbos, El Kadeshi Tachna B'Shabbos, it has to have all been ground before Shabbos. And before the Beis Yosef, and it's clear in the Beis Yosef, Shemitam there, higher than the Meister Lahachin Ula Aroch Zuk Hamakashkesh L'Shaot. We should have prohibited the clock. Normally, it would have been prohibited for this reason to set the grandfather clock. And he says, Shehem Hazaigas, Hagedolim, these big clocks, says Rav Moshe, Shehayu Bedoros HaKoidmen, that they used to have in the old days. He's writing this in the 60s. Ubiyalduteinu Hishtamshu Oid, Bahar Bebatim, Bezaigas Ka'elu. Back in Russia, he said, we used to have big clocks like this. So they don't use them anymore by the 60s in America. Aval Kevan She'afi Me'achol Ragilim L'Takno Al Yom Shalem. But because the clock is normally wound up a day in advance, how do clocks work? You don't turn them on every time you need to see the time, or at least those kind of clocks you didn't. Maybe now with electrical clocks, with digital clocks you might. So we wouldn't make a gezeira shema yomru she'asa b'Shabbos erichzor. No one thinks you made the clock work on Shabbos. It makes a noise. It should have been oser, but it's not, because everybody knows that you turn them on Friday. You set them on Friday. But with the microphones, I'll just summarize what he says at the end, with the microphones, since nobody would think ever that you turned it on Friday, why would someone think that? Then it's also for this reason. Because people are going to say, oh, he's working machinery on Shabbos, oi, zilzil Shabbos. Ah, but it was set on Friday. Who's going to know that? The question is, well, really, people are not going to know that. Yeah. Common practice, don't people realize that? What about electrical Shabbos clocks and timers? Surely by the 1960s, 70s, people realized they had Shabbos clocks, Shabbos timers. Rav Moshe should take into account that people might think you put it on a timer. And the answer is yes, but Rav Moshe himself was very against any use of Shabbos timers for anything, which is one of the reasons why Shabbos timers didn't figure strongly in his equation. Look over the page on page 5. I couldn't resist bringing you this. This is Rav Moshe's tshuva about nothing to do with microphones. He's asked about using Shabbos timers to turn on other things, to turn on heating elements or food or anything like that. He says the following. Hine lefiani asaiti. I think, in my humble opinion, pashut she'asur lahatirza. I don't think you can allow these timers. The harei al yidei moira shas kazod yicholim la'asot kol ha'malachus b'Shabbos. You could do anything you like on a timer on Shabbos. You could turn Shabbos into Thursday. Ubechol batei acharoshes, all of the factories. Ein lecha zilzul gadol l'shabbat mizeh. Everybody's factory is going to work on a Shabbos clock. And therefore Shabbos will just be basically cheapened enormously. Ubarur, and he says a very interesting thing, and this is where it becomes meta halachic and hashkafic a little bit. Ubarur, it's clear to me, she'im haya zeh bizmana tanayim v'amorayim. If the rabbis of the Gemara had only known about Shabbat timers, hayo oisrin zeh, they would have prohibited it. Now, this is an interesting route to go down in halacha. Because once you start asking that kind of question, well, if they'd known about this, if they'd known about that, they didn't know about it, and he addresses that at the end. They would have prohibited it. Kamosha Asra Amirul Akum Mitamzeh, just like they prohibited asking a non-Jew. Why is it prohibited to ask a non-Jew directly on Shabbos to do something for you? Because before long, you'll be asking him to do this and asking him to do that, and then, you know, you can just go to work and dictate your emails to someone else who'll type them up, and Shabbos will turn into a weekday. V'gam ulai hu mimeila b'chlala isa. And I go even further. Even if you tell me the Chazal didn't know about them, therefore why are you asking that? Maybe Shabbos clocks are already prohibited within that prohibition of asking the non-Jew. The Chalal is there. The Asru Amiru La'akum. The Asru Chol Malacha Anasit Bishvil Yisrael. Because what does that mean? You're not allowed to have any Malacha done for a Jew. Mitzad Amiru Yisrael. Because of what the Jew said to the non-Jew. The Koshike Mitzad Masa HaYisrael. All the more so if you set it yourself. He wants to say that setting a time switch is worse than asking a non-Jew. Because you did it. And it's doing happening for you on Shabbos. What about those little robots that clean the floor? Can you have them going on Shabbos? You set it up before Shabbos and then it's going up and down the floor on Shabbos. What happens in 25 years when we've got big robots running around the house doing all sorts of things? Will you be allowed to have your robot programmed who will just do everything? I mean, it's not a non-Jewish person. It's a Jewish robot, right? But it's not Robbie the robot, it's Reuben the robot. So the point is this included? He says, yes, absolutely. You can't have your robots working for you on Shabbos. Not allowed. Aval af im neima, even if you want to tell me, says Rav Moshe, she'ein la'aso ela ma she'tiknu chachamim, that you can never do more than Chazal did. That's it. Chazal didn't know about them. You can't start bringing in new things. Ve'ein le'melech mizeh la'asur gam ma she'hav, besvora hu chamor. You can't just use svora. Maybe you can't just use logic to say, well, presumably, if this was, then that must be. Even if you say that, she'al kompanim loy asr, because at the end of the day, they didn't prohibit it. Av she'haya zeh machma she'loy haya inyan zeh b'yamei Chazal. And the only reason they didn't prohibit it is because they didn't have it. Ein zeh isu mamash, so I can't tell you there's a real issa. And then he says at the end, and I love this at the end, mikol makom ein lahatil zeh. But I'm not going to allow timers. Kiven shehu davar she'roy le'asr, because it should be asr, even if it's not. It should be. And the reason's clear. The reason's clear. Because you could turn Shabbos into a weekday, and this is a real concern. He's very concerned about technology just blurring the lines between Shabbos and the weekday, and I think he's got a very good point there. Even though he can't quite put his hands on an exact reason to prohibit it, and he accepts that, he doesn't like it. But the truth is, the world has not followed this approach of Rav Moshe Feinstein. And we now use Shabbos clocks for many, many things across the spectrum of orthodoxy. Air conditioning is on timers. Heating is on timers. He didn't like any of that. Milking machines in farms are on timers. Many, many things are on timers. And therefore the watering, as I said, sprinklers. And therefore the world doesn't seem to have gone down the route of Rav Moshe on time switches. So the question is, how does that then relate back to the microphones? Will people really assume that you're doing it on Shabbos? Or will people say, no, it's on a timer. Of course it's on a timer, etc. Let's move on quickly because we have little time left. Ubdin Dechol is a whole subject in and of itself, which is a category that Tzitz Eliezer wants to say that Shabbos microphones are Ubdin Dechol. Wochendick, if you like. A weekday type thing. This is a real category, a real rabbinic category of halacha in Hilchos Shabbos, where you're blurring the lines between what is appropriate on Shabbos and not. But there again, that becomes a difficult one to define. Is it inappropriate to play baseball on Shabbos? Or to have the kids play football in the park? Is that Is that a weekday type thing? Is that a zilzul of Shabbos? Or is that, no, the kids are enjoying Shabbos, it's einik Shabbos, etc. That becomes almost a hashkafic thing, depending on which community you go to. Some communities, the kids are encouraged to go down to the ballpark on Shabbos, and other communities, they shut it down. I remember when the Eruv was going up in London many years ago, I remember Diane Erentroy saying specifically, if this leads to the kids playing ball in Hendon Park on Shabbos, we'll take the Eruv back down again. Because the ball, he considered playing ball to be a line that you can't cross. Interesting, okay? I don't know, I've not lived there for 15 years, whether the kids do play ball. I'm going for Shavuot, I'll check, okay? Nevertheless, that is an issue. Now, let's just look at one more issue, and we'll get back to Tzomet. So, Hashma Kol, making noise on Shabbos, is a concern, but we saw the halacha is not black and white. A, the Sfaradim are more mekel. B, the Ashkenazim are mekel b'dieved. See, it applies only when people will think that you did it on Shabbos and you're breaking Shabbos, but not when the people expect it to be done before. But there's another issue, which is Shema Yitakim Klishir. Have a look here in number 11. Kol Shechayavim Alav Mishum Shvus, says the Mishnah, anything which you are prohibited rabbinically from doing on Shabbos, the Shabbos, Chayavim Alav V'Yontif, you're also not allowed to do on Yontif. The Elohim Mishum Shvus, and the following are rabbinic prohibitions it lists in the Mishnah. Lo Oilim De'ilan, you're not allowed to climb a tree on Shabbos, in case you come and break the branches off. The loy roich bin al gabi behema, you're not allowed to ride animals on Shabbos. Again, you're worried that people might pull off branches, the animals, whatever. Loy shakin al pnei hamayim, you're not allowed to go swimming in the sea on Shabbos, in case you might come to form some kind of a life, raft or a bit of wood that you get into trouble and you break things into pieces and you're going to form something on Shabbos. The loy matapchim, the loy matsapkin, the loy maraktim. You can't clap. You can't slap your thighs, and you can't dance. Lama, why can't I mean, slapping my thighs, I'm not worried about being not allowed to do that. But why can't I dance on Shabbos? People can't dance on Shabbos? You tell that to the Kalbach minion. Says the Gemara number 12, because we're worried somebody might fix up a musical instrument, which could be not just making a music, who's going to design a new guitar in 15 minutes while people are dancing, but tuning the guitar is also an Issur D'oraita. That's clearly Tikkun Kli. So say, Chazal, you're not allowed to do these things because people might come. As soon as people are dancing and clapping, then all of a sudden someone grabs a guitar, someone else grabs a flute, someone else grabs a drum, and then, lo and behold, they're tuning it up. You know, give me an A, let's get it all nice, and then that's the Doraisa. Tosfos already, in the Middle Ages, says, in number 13, he wants to be lenient on this. Perush Rashi, he says, Shema Yitakin Klishe, because maybe people will make a musical instrument, double page 6, number 13, Umihu Lididan, for us, in medieval Germany, he says, Shari, says Tosfos, we hold that you're allowed to dance on Shabbos, and clap on Shabbos. So that could be a mayhem, because it's very societally contextual. It's only back in those days, Shehayu Bikim La'asot Klishir. They used to be more into making musical instruments, tuning them, playing them, etc. Shayach Lemigza. Then you can start talking about rabbinic prohibitions. Don't dance in case someone makes or tunes an instrument. Avaladi Dan, but for us, Einanu Bikim La'asot Klishir. We don't really have any of that today. It's interesting. I don't know what the social context was that he says we don't really have musical instruments much. Maybe there was nothing much to dance and sing about during the Crusades in Europe, okay? The Loi Shaykh Lemigzah, this Gezerah doesn't apply, which itself is fascinating because he's not disagreeing with the Gemara, but he's just saying the Gemara only made that particular rabbinic prohibition in that context where it's realistic to be concerned. We're not concerned. Dance Gezunter hates. Interestingly, the Shulchan Aruch does not follow that psak at all. The Shulchan Aruch clearly says, Hashma kol b'klishe, also you can't play musical instruments, and elsewhere he says you can't, number 14, can't clap, you can't dance, etc. He says you can bang on the door, the hakish al adelet, you can bang on the door, that's okay. Says the Ramah, v'chein im loy avid ma'aseh shari, and if it's not actually an act, that's okay. Ulechein elu shekoin lechavrehum mitzasefim b'piem. People who whistle, you know, the kind of, I can't do it. We put the fingers in their mouth and they make a very loud whistle. Kamoit sipor, like a bird. Mutalatos for Shabbos. That you're allowed to do on Shabbos. The osala hakos for Shabbos al hadelet betabat hakavua bedelet. But don't go using the door knocker on Shabbos. You're not allowed to use the door knocker on Shabbos because that's all included in the prohibition on making any kind of musical sound. because the door knocker is designed to make that sound. So if you bang on the door knocker, he says, you can't do that. And very interestingly, if you look at the Shulchan Aruch and the Poskim, you're not allowed to dance on Shabbos. I remember back in the day when the old people in Shul used to say to us, you can't dance on Shabbos, it's against the Shulchan Aruch. And you know they're right. So why does everybody dance? Why does everybody dance today? So that's a whole shit in and of itself. The Ramot already brings that in his day people danced as well, and he said at the end of the day, even if you tell them not to, Mutav Shiyu Shogi Gim Lo Yumazidim, better they should not realize that it's awesome, and let them dance, and you know they won't listen to you anyway. And then he brings other svaras as well, but dancing on Shabbos is not so poshut, and Shemi attacking Klishir is a real issue. The Orach HaShulchan in number 15 writes, and why does it matter if you set it up before Shabbos? On this particular question, it doesn't matter at all if you set it up on Friday. If the concern is you might need to fiddle with it, so why do I care if it was going from Friday? The fact is that on Shabbos, when it's running, you might need to fiddle with it. You might need to play with it. That's a concern. You might fix it. And Rav Moshe comes in number 16 and says, come on, microphones. They go wrong more often than they go right. And it's true. You get feedback. You get crackle. You're always calling for some guy to come in and kind of fiddle with the knob. That, amazingly, that was true in 1969. That's true today still. It's 2018. And therefore, says Rav Moshe, given the Chazal made a gezeira that anything where people fiddle with it, people fix it, that makes a noise, a musical noise or a loud, you can't use it on Shabbos. And he comes out clearly and says, you can't use the microphone, just look at the end of number 16. Ulechein, third line down, Barur Shemeh, microphone, Asur Lishtamesh Bo, you're not allowed to use the microphone on Shabbos, V'yontef, V'ein Lahakel, you're not allowed to be lenient, Af L'Tzorich Gadol, even though there's a serious need, Ulechein Asur L'malas Kvodah, and therefore he's writing to the person who asked the Shaila, you are prohibited, L'Kabel Misra Kazo, you can't take that job as a shul rabbi, Sheyitzarech ledaber al yidei microphone b'shabbos. If they tell you, you have to say, and there are shuls. There's a shul in Baltimore, one of my talmidot married the rov of the shul. They have a Tzomet microphone. Said Rav Moshe, he wasn't talking about Tzomet, but I assume he'd have said the same thing. You can't just take that job as the rov of that shul. They're going to make you speak in the microphone on Shabbos. Now, let's just finish off with a few important hashkafic considerations. On a hashkafic level, why are we also concerned? Well, the Tzitz Eliezer in number 17 raises a point. I haven't got time to go into all of the sources, but he says, clearly there's a concern that the masses will be very confused. People know that electricity, that clock's actually touched fast, I think, but people know that electricity is prohibited on Shabbos. If they walk in a shul and they hear people using a microphone, they'll go, oi, I didn't know you could use electricity on Shabbos, and they will go off and use electricity on Shabbos. So that's a concern, and I think that really is a concern. Ask the average Joe in the street who knows a little bit about halacha, a microphone's okay. Oh, no, they're not okay. But there's a shul that uses them. Oh, that's weird. Oh, and that's going to confuse people. And I think that's true very much today as well. The Tzitz Eliezer says that. But Rav Rozen, when he gives his long tshuva about why he thinks the microphone's okay, he writes in number 18, he says, I think actually there's an elephant in the room here that no one's actually talking about properly, which is that the real reason why everyone's worried about this is because of the similarity with reform. And he says, even though people are making halachic arguments of Makkeh B'Patish and Boineh and Moilid and Hashmas, Kol and Shemi Yitzak and Klishir, and they have what to say on that, the real underlying issue is this is the hallmark of a reform, or at least a non-Orthodox community. And therefore, even if there is no halachic technical problem, that's why people don't like it. And I think that's very much the case. Some people do, Rav Moshe never mentioned it explicitly, although in the next shiva, which we're going to look a little bit with other things next week, he goes through the issue of the hearing aid. When it comes to the hearing aid, it's almost exactly the same technology. And he goes through the same four arguments that he used against the microphone, and he says in the next tshuva, but probably for the hearing aid, we can be lenient, and that's okay, and we can rely on the mekilim, and it's fine, largely because he, first of all, hearing aids is not a key dividing issue between Orthodox and Reform, and also because he wants people to be able to hear on Shabbos. There's a covered habrius angle involved as well. We'll look at that a little bit more. Even though in the end of that tshuva, he says, actually, though, I think you shouldn't speak to people who are wearing hearing aids How that works, we'll see. Exactly. We'll see why he said that and how he said that and what he meant by that. We'll see that next week. He's not worried about the person wearing the hearing aid. He's more worried about the person speaking to the person wearing the hearing aid. But we'll get to that next week. But the Minchas Yitzchak says explicitly in number 19 that I'm more concerned with microphones than I am. Look at 19. Menogele Isel Hishdamshus the microphone. Hevetil Alocha Gidivri Amachmirim. I have gone on the strict side when it comes to microphones. Shelo Lahavi Pirtzok V'Chomot Beit Yisrael. I don't want there to be breaches in the walls of the Jewish people. Again, the microphone issue is a key divider. Aval Benogele Hamachonet. Shmia, when it comes to Mechonat Shmia, the hearing aid, Kevin She'ein Osim Zod Mishum Pirtzah, people are not making a statement or a move in terms of Hashkofa, Rakli Shami Mitzakana Drachim, people are just worried they're not going to get knocked down when they cross the road, because they can't hear the traffic. Samachti Ala Mekilim Bazeh, then I'm lenient. Rav Moshe Sternbuch, Shlita, in his classic way, he's not afraid ever to mention the elephant in the room, and he has a very, very Harif critique of microphones. He says you can't even, number 20, you read it for yourself later, you can't even use them in a shul on a weekday. Because that itself is a hallmark of reform communities. They can't even have, and he's very, very harif. He says you'll end up with an organ in the shul, you'll end up with this, you'll end up with that. And he uses very strong expressions, muktzamach masmias, very, very strong expressions against it. But bottom line, the Tzomet did come out with their microphone. There are, maybe we'll talk a bit about this week, there are real precedents, by the way. It's not just a made-up thing for concern for what non-Orthodox groups will then claim. So I'll just give you two examples. One of them is very applicable for Shavuos. Source 21 talks about when Shavuos fell on Shabbat back in the time of the Mikdash. So then the main day for bringing the Korbanos, the individual Korbanos, was on Sunday, the next day. So Sunday was the big festive day, even more a little bit than Shabbat. But since there were sectarian groups in that period of time, the Dafka wanted Shavuos always to fall on a Sunday, because of Mimacharas HaShabbat, they counted the Omer from the Sunday after Pesach, Nachon. Since there were groups that would go, aha, you see, Sunday is the day, so they downplayed Shavuos, Dafka, when it came on a Sunday, so that the other guys wouldn't say, ah, oh, you see. And similarly, I brought you a Mishnah number 22 about Shechita. You can shecht almost any way you like, as long as you do it properly with the knife in the proper way. And he talks about shechting the blood running into a pit. Okay, so shecht and let the blood run into a pit. Why do you care? It doesn't matter. But once there was a group, again, of sectarian, mainstream halachic thinkers or anti-halachic thinkers that said, you have to shecht into a pit. Once then they said that, then now we're all worried. Oh, so now should we or shouldn't we? Even though technically there's nothing wrong with it, but now people are going to, now it makes a point. You know, sometimes things take on a life beyond themselves. You know, a group of women making a zimun at a meal is halachically entirely non-controversial. There are even people that will say it's an obligation. But now that there are people that will say, oh, that means that you're feminist, whatever that means, etc. So now it takes on a whole life beyond itself, and you have to ask, do you mind what people say? Anyway, bottom line, I'll leave it with the Tzomet microphone on number 23. Rav Rosen set out a 12 or 13 point list of things that need to be done in order for the Tzomet microphone to work. It has to not have an on-off switch, it's only alternating, modulating current, you can't hold it in your hand. There has to be no heat involved or lights or sparks or anything. There has to be a label that is Shabbat friendly. There has to be what if it goes wrong? There has to be a system that it can be turned off in a grommer way than it can't be turned on again. You can read it for yourself. Yes, you're trying to make a point.
Are there any
So that's a good question. Now, he makes the point, Rabbi Rosen, that the reform issue should be less of a concern for us in Israel, because there is less of a perceived battle, if you like, between those two hashkofas, those two opinions. But I don't know, does anyone here know of a shul in Israel that uses a Tzomet microphone? There must be some. Does anyone know of one? Okay, homework for next week. Between now and next week, please bring me a list of the shuls in Israel that use a Tzomet microphone, and whether you'll daven in them or not, okay? And then next week we'll go to the next stage and take it way beyond this. Have a great week.